privileged to be able to introduce
Father God, I want to thank you for Shanine. I want to thank you for Ray as well.
We're probably running a little bit behind time.
And I'm
so,
just pray that your spirit and forgets to like be with her as she speaks the words
comfortable and free to,
she has to
leave if you want, but
bring this morning
I know Shanine's got an awesome message.
Yes, you would bring clarity.
So Shanine, she is the president. Her and her husband are the president of one of the biggest gangs in New Zealand. No, I'm just kidding. It's just YWAM New Zealand. But her and her husband are the presidents, the directors of YWAM New Zealand. And she's got an awesome message. I first met Shanine.
We'll
I've been working quite closely with her husband
now,
on the Baptist Māori Ministry.
It's a real privilege to be here this morning, and I'm a little bit familiar with the church
at, a Baptist
here,
gathering,
just a little bit, because
or the first Baptist
we
hall, actually, which was in Bethlehem and Tauranga.
I'm not sure if they're
and
still
she spoke
here, but were for a long time,
just,
John and Christine Banks.
Whoa. It was
they're
so
very
outside
good friends
the box,
of ours, and they hosted Ray and I during Impact
her,
World Tour when we came
amazing.
Through,
so,
I think, in 2004.
If you guys want to just
and so
give her a warm welcome.
We had heard a lot about the church here and everything, so it's really awesome to be connected here. I just want to thank Rob, as well as Matt and Rachel, for inviting me to come and speak. And I hear that you guys have been on quite a journey, and a bit of a journey over these past couple of weeks with different speakers and things. And so it's a privilege for me to be here to be a part that journey. So God's redemptive plan for Aotearoa New Zealand. So that's quite a big, broad subject, but I felt like my role this morning was just to really sow some seeds of truth into that journey as part of it. There's a photo that just came up before. This is my family. So I'm Shanine. I'm from Australia originally. I've lived here for 25 years. Yay! Usually that's not the response I get in New Zealand when I say I'm from Australia. So I just usually gird myself for the boos and everything like that. But yeah, thank you. And so this is my husband, Ray. Ray is Māori, obviously. He's from both Tainui as well as Tauranga Moana. And then we have our two daughters, Modi Paihere. That is the short version of her name. That means her full name is Modi Paihere Ki Te Tapu. And that means bonded to holiness. So she's the oldest one, she's 16. Now Modi Paihere, she's very gentle, she's very kind-hearted, she's very compassionate, and she's also about all things beautiful. But she would like to be a doctor, because that's where her compassion kind of leads herself to. And then we have Micah. Now Micah, don't let the face fool you, she is mischief all over. Now Micah has no filter. So you know usually what people think Micah voices, you know, so you'll be with a group of people and there'll be this really naughty kid and you'll be thinking, gee, that kid's naughty. She'll go to the parent and say, gee, your kid's naughty. And you know, so I have to do a lot of damage control with Micah. But Micah has decided that she would like to be either a NASA scientist or the Prime Minister of New Zealand. And I'm thinking she's probably heading toward the Prime Minister role at the moment. So she's 11, she turns 12. In December, actually. So this is my family. So as you can see, we're quite mixed and we're quite different. So when I was asked to speak at the Baptist Hui years ago, I was asked to speak about biculturalism. And I think that that's quite a broad, interesting, and can be a little bit of a challenging subject. But what I wanted to speak on was my own journey into that context. And my journey into that context has been very real because obviously I've married into another culture and I'm not living in a culture that's my own. And above and beyond anything else, I think that the whole journey of biculturalism, or I think about this whole issue between Māori and non-Māori here in New Zealand, it really comes down to relationship. That's really what it is, and being able to take the risk of relationship. Now, I do a lot of speaking on cross-cultural stuff, but I mainly talk about relationships. And it's not because I'm good at it, I'm a real introvert, actually. And so when we got married, my husband and I, it's quite interesting because I have two cousins, period. That's it, I have two cousins. Now, my husband over 100 first cousins on his mum's side, and he has over 100 first cousins on his dad's side. So when we said we would just invite immediate family to the wedding, I had to rally around 20 people, and that included my brother's friends and all sorts of people, and then there was my husband's family. Now another thing that happened was we moved into a new house, and I said to my mother-in-law, won't you come and see this house that we've moved into? And so she came with 28 other people, and they decided that they would stay, you know, for 4 or 5 days. And now I'm an introvert, and so this really does my head in. And so I thought, my room's going to be my sanctuary, so I'll just go into my room at night and, you know, and I'll just unwind and I'll just de-people. And the first night I did it, I went into my room. And then two of Ray's aunties followed me and hopped into bed because they didn't want me to feel alone. But I really wanted to feel alone. It's actually what I wanted. So I don't think that I'm really good at relationship, but I've realized that in order to fulfill everything that God wants for me to engage in order for us to see his kingdom come here on earth, in order for us to discover the uniqueness of who God is through all the different peoples he's placed on earth, I have to learn how to do relationship. And so my journey into this whole biculturalism thing has really been just a journey of relationship. Now, I really believe that diversity is God's plan to reveal himself here on earth. I think God is too big to be contained in any one gender. He's too big to be contained in any one people group. And therefore, our responsibility is to model unity within that diversity. And so this is the importance and significance of this relationship that we embark on. And so here you've heard a lot of story over these past couple of weeks about the New Zealand journey, but most of it is it all comes down to relationship. And the reality is that the church should really be leading in these areas. We should really be the ones modeling in these areas, but oftentimes we kind of aren't very good at that. Now, last night, our new Prime Minister had made a few statements, and she said, my vision is that we as a country realise the promise of the treaty. And then she went on to say, I don't want us to rest until we actually have a country where Māori are equally enjoying a shared success. Now, the government will start leading out in some of these areas, but the church is really the place that has the authority. Because we have a covenant in this land, and we understand covenants as a church. And this is where I would love to see us head. So, as I said, I'd married into this other culture. Clearly things were very different to my own. And I had to come to the place where I made a decision about how deep I would go into understanding this whole cross-cultural relationship. See, because I couldn't just sit on the outskirts of it because my children were Māori. So I really had to understand two things. I had to understand Te Ao Māori, the Māori world and everything that it encompassed, because this was a part of who my children were. But I also had to understand all of these contentions that were in the land. I had to understand the story of the land, because no longer was I a bystander looking on at these things. These contentions and these struggles were suddenly being my own children. These things that were being said about this cross-cultural struggle in our treaty relationship, they were suddenly being said about my children. And so I couldn't just sit back and look and take a, you know, sit on the side and look in. I had to understand and I had to journey deep into those things and understand. Now, I could have left it up to my husband to deal with all of those cross-cultural things, but I really felt like it was important for me to show value to the side of my children that wasn't like me, and vice versa. Because I see so often in many cross-cultural relationships that there is a tendency just to go to the dominant relationship or the dominant culture within that. So I know many cross-cultural relationships where they just speak one language in the house. We determined that we would speak two because it represented both things. So our children go to and have gone through right since they were little to total immersion Māori language schools. And they have been there and are still there. So I realised that I had to delve into these things and I had to understand these issues, not from what I read in the book, not from what I had seen on the news, because at the risk of sounding like Donald Trump, the news can be fake sometimes and it's very inflammatory. And I know that because I've been on the side of many things that I've been right in the middle of it and then I've seen the news report it and think, my goodness, that's not how it played out. But that's what we actually like to hear. I had to learn, I had to choose to engage and I had to choose to be quiet and listen without any defensiveness. and I had to be intentional. As I said, I had to take the risk of relationship. So as I began on this journey and as I began to look into things, I had this realization, because we hear this thing a lot about biculturalism, and I don't kind of get into a lot of those buzzwords because I think it is a bit of a buzzword. I mean, we're just talking about relationship between two peoples, which I guess essentially creates biculturalism. But anyway, sorry, it's diverging there. But the thing I discovered in this whole bicultural journey was that Māori are already bicultural. So if you think about it, Māori already function within our government systems, within our judicial systems, within our education systems, with all of that sort of stuff, because they've had to learn how to do that over the past 170 years or so. So as I had this realization, I realized that, and within our churches, most of our churches really represent a monocultural presentation each Sunday, because that's what's comfortable for the majority. You know, and I run a big multicultural organization myself, and not just in New Zealand, but I oversee ministries in South Africa and in Asia and in the Pacific as well. And I know how difficult it is to facilitate many, many different cultures that are represented there. And so we tend to go for the monocultural way. And we tend to think that, and we pride ourselves on our multiculturalism. You know, oh, we've got many different cultures in our organization. YWAM does this all the time. After all, we're in all the countries all over the world. We're really good at this. But if we still do things a monocultural way, then we're not very multicultural at all. And so as I began in this journey, I realized that if anybody was going to have to find a new way of understanding things, if anybody was going to have to find a new way of thinking, if anybody was going to have to understand a different type of worldview, it was actually going to be me. I was actually going to have to be the one to do that, because I was already journeying with a people that could cross over really well. It was me that couldn't cross over to the other side. So I really think that as the body of Christ, journeying together should be of our one of our highest priorities. And I think if we're able to remove any perceived threats we may have to our way of doing things, any preconceived ideas we may have from years and years of hearing different stories that may or may not be true, even dealing with maybe fears we have or pride within our own heart, then we're simply left with people and just journeying with other people. And it's journeying with people that reflect a part of God that I know not. And this is the thing that I love about working cross-culturally, is that when I go and immerse myself in another culture, I discover parts of God that I never, ever knew even existed, because I only see him through my own God box. You know, we all have a God box, and that God box is kind of defined by our cultural orientation. It's defined by our church that we may attend. It's defined by our experiences in God. And so if my experience of God's faithfulness and your experience of God's faithfulness may be completely different, but they're still God's faithfulness. You know, I had a friend once, she was a leader, and whenever God spoke to her, he confirmed things to her with 11 scriptures. I would never get a scripture when God spoke to me. And she would always be like, well, I'm sorry, it's not God. Well, you didn't get the 11 scriptures to back it up. But the 11 scriptures was her experience with God. It wasn't my experience with God. And you see, sometimes when we come up against things that do not look like my experience with God, we discount it as not being God. But if we can actually allow our God box to expand, when we engage with other peoples, we discover a part of the Father that we know not, because it's different to what resides within our God box. And so that's a huge challenge that we have. Now, Nelson Mandela made a comment once, and he said, "May your choices reflect your hopes, not your fears." May your choices reflect your hopes and not your fears. See, I know you've had quite a bit of talk about the treaty, but the treaty is just words on paper. It's people that make it real. And sometimes we need to become captivated with one another's humanity, with our commonness, and be able to start with there as our platform. So anyway, as I've gone through my journey, now if you keep in mind that I've been involved in cross-cultural missions for over 25 years, This is my specialty. It's what I specialize in. I lecture on it all over the place. I do all these sorts of things. So I thought engaging in this cross-cultural marriage thing would be really, really easy. But I was really, really wrong. And even the other thing was, you know, I've got Māori friends and I'd lived in New Zealand for ages and, you know, all of this stuff. But it's completely different when you are actually in that scenario. And the thing that I discovered, and I speak on it a lot, the thing I just was reminded of in my own heart was my own ethnocentrism. Now, what does that mean? It literally means evaluating other cultures according to preconceptions that originate in the standards and customs of one's own culture or our own way of doing things. So basically, our own ethnocentrism makes us think that the way we see the world is the world. That the way we do things is how things should be done. That the lens that we see through is actually the way that everybody should see the world. And if they don't see it that way, then how they see it isn't a true representation of how things are. Another way you could say it is that we're all culturally drunk. Drunk in our own cultures, and we're all like this. And if you think about it, somebody that's drunk and realizes it, they'll ask for help. You know, they'll hand you their keys, they won't drive, they do all of that. But the most dangerous person, drunk person, is the one that denies it. They're the one that goes and causes all sorts of damage. And so in this journey, I had to realize how culturally drunk I was in my own ways of seeing things, in my own ways of doing things, if I was ever to be able to have a good relationship. I'm flying through this because I'm aware of time. But another thing, and I think it is probably one of the main priorities in any relationship, is that we need to learn to listen and listen well. Most of us spend our time in any conversation waiting to respond. So we listen in order to respond. We hear what someone's saying and we're waiting to be able to have our comeback, our rebuttal. Our thoughts on what you're saying. You know, we spend a lot of time in this world trying to get other people to understand us. All you need to do is have a teenager in your house. I don't know how often my teenager says, we'll say stuff, my teenager says, you just don't understand. And I feel like saying to you, not, I was a teenager at one point, but you know, we spend a lot of time wanting to be understood, but we take very little time trying to understand. So when we listen, we need to listen with ears that are wanting to understand. Winston Churchill said, it takes great courage to stand up and speak, but it takes just as much courage to sit down and listen. Listening's really important. And in the listening, we need to be asking each other what our stories are. What's your story? And we don't do that much in today's day and age because we are so busy. And of course, we are. Our society has created a false sense of knowing. We know Māori because it's, you know, it's all over the news. I can research. I can do all the stuff. We know that. I know Pākehā because it's written all over the news. And I, you know, we know. But our society creates a false sense of knowing. You know, we see the All Blacks game and Sonny Bill does something cool afterward, and we go, "Oh, that's so typical of Sonny Bill." I mean, we'd have no idea if it was typical of Sonny Bill, but we feel like we know him because we've seen him on TV and all of that. But really, we have to ask people their stories because assumption kills. And when we assume things about people based on our own bias or based on previous experiences or based on whatever, it really dishonors them and it dishonors the reflection of God that lives within them. Now, that can happen quite easily. You know, my youngest daughter, the one without the filter, She's very comfortable in her own skin. And she walked out the other day and she looked really nice in what she had on. And I said, "Oh, gee, your outfit looks nice." She goes, "Yeah, I know." And my older daughter goes, "Oh my gosh, you are so vain. You are so arrogant. You are so, oh, people will think you are so cocky." And she does. People think she's cocky. And so she turned and she said, "But I don't understand. Why would I wear something that didn't look very nice? I know it looks good and that's why I put it on." And in her mind, it was very black and white. You know, it looked good, so I put it on, so I know it looks good. And so I said to her, I said, "Well, when someone says you look nice, the appropriate response is, thank you." And she went, "Huh, okay." And just had never crossed her mind that that's what you do. But to most people, she comes across as a very cocky, very full of herself young girl, but in her mind, everything's very black and white. You know, there's another story that Ray, you see Ray there, there was a missions conference, and it was a gathering of all the mission agencies that are based here in New Zealand. And he was coming to speak, and he arrived late. And so when he arrived, he went up to the desk to check in, and he said, he was just about to introduce himself, and the person behind the desk said, no, I know exactly who you are. And so Ray really felt really good about himself. He thought he was awesome, they know who I am, it's great. So the guy got together the package and everything, and he handed it to him, and he said, here you go, Eugene, have an awesome day. Now you see the difference between Ray and I would have gone, oh, I'm sorry, there's a mix-up, I'm not Eugene. Ray goes, thank you so much, and he just took it and he went. So then Ray went inside, and he wanted to have a look at what the breakdown was of the speakers. So how could he have been confused with Eugene? And there was no photo of Eugene. But what it said in there was that Eugene was a gang leader that had just gotten out of prison, and he was coming to share with everybody. So they took one look at Ray, and they assumed that that's who he was. Now, Ray is not, that's not who Ray is at all, but that's assumption. And so we need to really be careful about assuming things. And we do that within our context here. We assume why people do what they do. We assume why we stand up here and Matt may sing a Māori song. He must want us all to become Māori. Or you know what I mean? We assume these things. Now, asking people what their stories are can be really liberating. We were in Canada, and we went to a small group there, and they said to us, look, we've got a native guy here, First Nations guy. He doesn't participate in anything, like nothing. He just sits in the corner, he's quiet, he's been coming for years. And you know, he's a typical native, you know, he's probably got alcoholism and all this sort of stuff in his background. And this is what we were told. And anyway, we were there, and so they were glad Ray was there because they thought Ray will be able to connect with him. So we were all sitting around, and sure enough, true to form, he didn't say a word. And then anyway, Ray leant forward and he said to him, what's your story, bro? And there was silence. Everybody kind of leant forward because they all wanted to know. They'd never asked the question. So he began to share his story. And his story was filled with much heartache and much pain and much injustice. He was a part of the time when the kids were moved into residential schools and all the awful things that had happened there. Now, I'm sure there were some joys in his life, but the reality was, for him, the sum total of his life was these negative experiences that he had, and they were very real. And so he began to tell us that story. And that was it, and Ray and I just spent a bit more time with him, and then we moved on. 2 weeks later, we got a phone call, and they said to us, we have to tell you that Terence's life has just turned around. And he's participating in church. He's actually standing up. He's sharing things that God's been speaking to him. He's praying for people. He's gone from hanging out in the back to now fully participating. And we said to him, what was the difference? And he said, somebody asked me my story. He said, suddenly I didn't feel judged. Suddenly I didn't feel like people were assuming things about me. I felt heard, and I was still loved and embraced in that context, and there was a place for me. So when people tell us their stories, we have to believe their experiences as they tell them to us, even if they make us uncomfortable. For those people there, as Terence was telling his stories about all the uncomfortable things that had happened to him in the residential schools, it made everybody else there uncomfortable, but that was still the reality of his story. See, we can't run his experience through our lens to see if we think it's truthful. We can't run it through our lens to make it seem more palatable to us. That is just the reality. And Terence responded because he felt heard. He felt known. No one judged him. No one dismissed what he had to say or minimized it because that was so far in the past. Let's move on. We're in the future now. People embrace that. You know, this morning as I walked in, I was greeted by a lovely gentleman whose name I can't remember. Sorry, what was it? David. And he walked right up to me and he said, Shanine, how are you? How's Ray and the kids? And in that moment, I suddenly felt known and I felt embraced and I felt like I belonged because somebody had taken the time to know a little bit about my story and a little bit about who I was. And that was really special, so thank you for that. But that's the importance of understanding story. Now, in this whole journey, this whole cross-cultural thing, this whole bicultural journey, we have to allow ourselves to become uncomfortable. If we want to be comfortable, then it's not going to work very well. Now, that may be, for some of us, that may be through a context where we find ourselves visiting a marae. But for some of us, that may be through a context where we're just having some really uncomfortable conversations. And you've probably sat in here and felt a little bit uncomfortable as there's been the story of the land has been shared, as people have talked about the Treaty of Waitangi, as Jay, and I don't know what he was like, but I know he can be really provocative, you know, and he does that and then he leaves and everybody's like, excellent. So, you know, I'm sure that kind of happened. But, you know, we have to be able to allow ourselves to be uncomfortable. And human nature is that we want to take people away from where they are to my place of comfort. If I could just move the conversation over to here where I feel comfortable. If I could just worship God over here where I feel comfortable. If I could just do relationships in my context because it makes me feel comfortable. We have to be allow ourselves to get uncomfortable and have some difficult conversations. Another thing that I discovered that I really had to do was I had to show up in every conversation. So what does that mean? I had to really engage in conversations and, well, something was shared this morning with the group from Thailand, and the gentleman had mentioned that when he was looking through his own Western worldview, he was thinking, why don't they just fix up these toilets? Why don't they just do it? You know, that would be the answer. And then he said he discovered as he went on that it's actually not that straightforward. It was really this and this and this that was involved. So now if he has a conversation with somebody else and they say, look, why don't these people just fix up their situation? He's able to say, well, actually, this is why they can't, because of this and because of this and because of this. That's showing up in a conversation. Or he could back down and he could say, yeah, you're right, no, they should do that, or we don't say anything. You know, as we go on this journey and as you go on this journey, and if there is a real conviction in your spirit about this whole bicultural sort of thing, when you're in conversations, you have to show up and you have to represent those things in those conversations and have those uncomfortable ones. You know, and it's speaking up. It's speaking up when someone makes an inappropriate comment or a racist comment or whatever. It's showing up at those times and representing God in those things and being Jesus to the people. It's being God with skin on in those circumstances. It'll take hundreds of individual acts of courage to see change come to our nation. It won't be just one thing. Some of us look to our government, some of us look to our churches, some of us look to whatever. But it's going to be all of us being involved. I have discovered more about Jesus and who he is in the painful and uncomfortable places that he's asked me to follow him than I have in any Bible study. It's in those painful and uncomfortable places that he shows up. But if we stay in our comfort zone, then we don't get to have the tension that comes with that. Now, I know I'm very aware of time, and I'm sorry that... I'll wrap up. I'll try and be short. I think that one of the most important things that we need to understand and embrace is story. Story is really important. And over these past couple of weeks, you've heard a lot about story, the story of this land. Some of you may have loved it, might have been fantastic, you'd never heard it before. Some of you may have thought this is completely irrelevant, that's in the past, we need to move on. Some of you may not have known how to engage with that. You know, it may be too painful, it may be too awkward, it may seem stupid. But irrelevant of all of those things, it is still the story. The story is the story. And we don't need to just listen to other people's stories, but we need to own our own story. And if we don't own our story owns us and it defines us. Now, we know this in our personal lives. If we have issues that we're dealing with in our personal life that we don't address or we don't own, if we don't own up to the fact that we may be struggling with pornography, if we don't own up to the fact that we may be struggling with pride, if we don't own up to the fact that we may have different addictions, we may be able to cover it for a little while, but it'll come back around, and it'll come back around, and it'll come back around, and we will always be that person that is the addict. We'll always be that person that's always prideful. We'll always be that person that struggles with pornography. Until you own that story and you acknowledge it and you own it and you move on from there, that's when you can write the ending. And so what we want to be able to do is that we can own our story so that we can have a different ending. And, you know, and that goes to our collective story. So in this land, our collective story, for the most part, still owns us. It defines us. And that's why the issues keep coming back up and keep coming back up and keep coming back up. And we need to have the courage to step into that story and own it so that we can write a different ending to it. Now, there's a difference between owning something and taking responsibility. Ownership comes from the inside out. It's a conviction that we have, that we've embraced and we've owned it. Responsibility comes from the outside in and it judges us. Now, we have within our capacity within this nation to rewrite the ending of our story. It's right here before us. But in order to do that, we have to pursue understanding. We have to be willing to get uncomfortable. And we have to take the risk of relationship. And the outcome of that struggle, you see, things, there's a struggle in that, and there's a struggle for me on a daily basis. As I said, my kids go to a total immersion Māori language school, and it was 5 years before I was able to really engage with anybody at the school there. So that was a real struggle for me. And then I go into another context, and there's another struggle. But the outcome of that struggle is all about our perspective of it. Do we see it as part of the journey, or do we see it as something we move away from? You see, we're really happy to engage in these cross-cultural contexts if we're out there on the mission field somewhere. You know, we go to another nation and we want to do all this cross-cultural stuff. And I've had the opportunity to travel all over the world and do this, and I know in my own life how easy this is. But here within our own land, we don't apply the same principles. We don't want to have the same engagement because this is where I'm comfortable and I shouldn't have to do it here where I'm comfortable. But this is all about part of the journey. So you see, for me in my journey now, I cannot talk about Māori things and separate myself from it because the issues that affect Māori affect me. Not only because they affect my children, but because I've married into this land and I'm a part of this land, and the struggles that people in this land have are the same struggles that I have. And I want to be able to journey with one another and to see freedom come for those things. Now, the most basic way to be able to do this, and I talk about the risk of relationship, for some of us the risk of relationship will mean going and meeting with some of the local tribes. For some of us it'll just mean befriending Māoris that we have and trying to understand in our communities and understanding how we can build a healthy relationship there and understanding one another. We have to choose to engage. And I think we have to take a posture of love and honour and humility and discovery with one another. You see, the whole thing about the bulk biculturalism is that it's actually a covenant. And the most perfect example that we have of a covenant in the Bible is of marriage. And we know that in the concept of marriage, that's our model of oneness. You know, I hear a lot that we need to be one nation. You know, we need to have, I was at a church once, and my husband didn't tell me what it was about, but it was a discussion, it was 15 years ago, on bicultural things. And there was a group of really angry non-Māori people there that wanted to discuss this. And I don't know why that particular group had all gathered. And I didn't know that I was meant to facilitate this. And so I was kind of thrown in the midst of it. And somebody had made this comment to me. They said, Māori always want to be separate. They want to have their own schools. They want to do all these things. They want to be separate, but we should be one. You know, and I made a comment at that time and I said, you're absolutely right. We should be one. So my kids' school, the Māori language school, they would have no hesitation for all of your kids to come to their school. You're right, we should have one school. And she went, no, hang on, that's not what I was talking about. I was talking about closing down all the Māori schools and everybody come to the mainstream schools. And I said, well, the thing is, if we're going to have to be one, whose one are we going to be? We have to pick one. So whose one is it? So the model that we have of oneness in the Bible is really of marriage. And so you see the coming together of two completely different people. And in that, in a healthy marriage, nobody loses their identity. They're still recognizable in their uniqueness. The male doesn't become female and the female doesn't become male. They maintain those unique things. Nobody should be inferior or superior to the other. In a healthy marriage, the needs of the other should be in the forefront of the partner and vice versa. Seeing that the other partner reaches their full potential should be of the highest priority of the other partner in that marriage and vice versa. There's give and take. The benefits of one should not be pursued at the detriment of the other and vice versa. There's a preferring of one another and an honoring of one another. And there are things that one cannot be without the other. I cannot be a mother without my husband, and he cannot be a father without me, you know, a parent, I should say, not a mother, a father, but a parent. And so this is the concept that we have of oneness. This is the model that we have of oneness. And this is the challenge that we have in the whole bicultural journey of oneness. This is what oneness looks like. So my challenge to us is that we celebrate one another, the unique reflection of who God is. We take the risk of relationship, and that we go with two baskets. Ray and I have been asked a lot by different missions groups to talk about visiting missions teams coming here to New Zealand. And you know, if you ever see any sort of promotion of any groups going to minister or them wanting to come to New Zealand, they're always like, I'm going to take the love of God there. I'm going to take all the things that God's shown me and I'm going to give it to the people. I'm going to take it and I'm going to share it and I'm going to do all this. Already assuming that there's no reflection or work of God being taken place in that place. I'm going to take all of this. Now, there are things that God gives us to take when we go to other nations, to go when we engage. And we have a basket full of stuff that we're just ready to pour out for everybody else. But our challenge to everybody when they go and they do mission stuff or when they engage in cross-cultural relationships is that they take two baskets. One's empty and one's full. One's full of all the things that people have, that God has spoken to us, and one's empty, being able to be filled by the people that we're engaging with as we see the reflection of God there and stuff that we don't know about who he is. So as we engage in this whole bicultural journey, however that looks for individuals, however it looks for the church, my challenge is that we do it with two baskets. One's empty and one's full. See, when we go through our full basket, there's nothing else to learn. This, I have the answers, I know what it is, here is my full basket. But if we go with an empty basket, there's an exchange. I'll share with you and you can share with me and we'll discover this together. See, the bicultural journey can't be just about let's go and save all the Māoris and see them come to church. That can't be what it's about. It has to be about journeying together with one another because I see a reflection of the Father in you that I know not, and I have a reflection of the Father in me that you know not. Let's partner together and let's journey together and walk together. So I have not shared any scriptures here today, and I realize that most people probably came with their Bibles ready to share, ready to read. But I really wanted to just sow some seeds of truth, and it's hard in a very short time to be able to do that. But again, just taking the risk of relationship and discovering what God has in that context. Now, when we first took over from Youth with a Mission New Zealand, Jay was actually the leader, and Jay gets very passionate. I don't know if that's how he was when he was speaking. He's very passionate, and he's very prophetic, and he's doing all these things, and he came out with this big word, and he's like, everything must change. You must do everything. Must go in the Māori way or something like that. And everybody in our organization went, what? But really what that was about was just being open to the journey together. And so my challenge today is let's just be open to the journey together, however that looks. There is nothing worse than someone standing up the front saying, we as a church have decided that we are going to now go on this bicultural journey. And you're like, if you're like me, is that right? Really? But really in your hearts, take the risk of relationship with one another and start there. And once that happens, then see where God leads that. It could be amazing. And remember that as a church, we should be leading in relationships. But sometimes as Christians, we're really bad at it. So let's lead in our relationships with one another. If the government does that, spectacular. But let's take our authority as the people of God within this nation. We understand what oneness is. We understand what covenants are. And let's walk together with one another. So kia ora.